Absolutely not.
Wait. Wait a minute. Listen to me. I'll teach you my recipe. Huh? What do you say? You want to cook like me?
This episode of the Plants Are People 2 podcast is in part brought to you by the World of Knowing, the Natural World Naturalist Institute. The more you know the natural world, the more you know your natural self. Observe and report.
East towards the light, towards the sun, and sent out ripples. Shooting out on his journey.
Left hand and your right hand are mere images of one another, right? Identical and yet opposite. Well, so too, organic compounds can exist as mere image forms of one another, all the way down at the molecular level.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Plants Are People 2 podcast. Growing season has started, so my life is getting increasingly more crazy, which I'm sure yours is too. If your life is dictated by when plants are growing, I've been late getting these shows out for the past 2 weeks. Have not been able to record them in advance, so I usually record them the day of now. Maybe I'll get back to doing it, you know, a couple days in advance and not feeling like I'm putting it together last minute. But hello to you all. Happy Sunday. We're going to be finishing off the New Mexico Botanical Road Trip Extravaganza that Lena and I took this past April. And it sounds like it's continuing to get more dry out there. Fires are going all over some places where we had been last month and then left, and those fires have since spread. But so last time I think I left you guys in Elephant Butte. I think Truth or Consequences was one of the last ones. So after Truth or Consequences, we went up into, I think we just drove 25 all the way up into Mountain Air, New Mexico, which is Route 60, and you head east, and then you head up into just the sort of the southern third of the Manzano Mountains, and Manzano Mountain State Park is right there. We went to Salinas Pueblo Missions National Park, which was really cool. I think it was an old monastery, and it's just a ruin now, but there's a bunch of hiking trails there. It was free to get in, which is always nice. But in this place, we sort of stopped in at the Pueblo before we went into the actual state park, but here we saw ribes species, and they were, you know, I'm used to seeing ribes around here, and they have very, like, inconspicuous flowers, very tiny, usually white. You usually just see them I hardly ever see them in flower. I have seen some this season that were pretty interesting, but that was triggered by paying attention to these ribes species in the sort of the foothills of these mountains and the desert in between. But we came across this little wetland, even though it wasn't wet at the time, but you could tell it was a little depression there, and there was a bridge where they have people walk over, so it must carry water at some time of the year. But it was Ribes aureum, which is the golden currant, long tubular flowers, five parted, so five petals, with a red center where the reproductive organs are. And I saw a lot of hummingbirds flying around, and I was like, what, you know, before we got to the Manzano Mountains, and I was wondering what those hummingbirds were feeding on. But I would wager a guess that these yellow flowers with the red center, I bet they're hummingbird pollinated. But they're like, you know, they've got to be an inch to an inch and a half long, bright yellow flowers on, you know, this little wetland. They were about the size, they were like a person tall, but tons of yellow flowers everywhere, all kinds of insects going after them. And then right next to that, growing in the same place, was another ribes species, cerium, C-E-R-E-U-M, which is called the wax currant, also five-parted. Not quite as tubular as those, the aurea species, but also had numerous flowers all over it. The ribes species that I see most often in Vermont, they're usually, I don't see a lot of flowers on them. Now, there was one that I found very recently down in Bennington, which had flowers on it that were like, there was Cynos body, C-Y-N-O-S-B-A-T-I, prickly gooseberry, which had flowers that were sort of really tiny, green, white. But then they almost look like a, I'm going to forget the name of that now. That's like the curse of being a person with all this Latin flying around in your head. But we found a number of, let me see if the Cynos body one wasn't the one I was thinking of, but let me see if I have that other one here. Oh, rubrum, Ribes rubrum, which has sort of, still has that five-parted petal. But these came down in vertical inflorescences. They sort of hung down, and then alternating off of that inflorescence was each flower. And they sort of alternate. They have like a, almost like a sandy burnt orange center, and then a cream colored white petal. And the you know, ribes, I tend to think of ribes being very prickly and thorny, but these ones, you do find them when they're smooth, and there are some species that have smooth stems. So they, you know, if they're in flower, they're kind of, you can get to a species pretty easily. Once they're out of flower, or they don't have fruit on them, I give up. I might be able to put them into like a group where it might be one of three species, but for the most part, I look for them in flower. So that's an important note for anyone who's out there observing the world. Anything you see in flower, that's the time to take some pictures and really look at the plant, because that's going to be your highest chance for IDing that, especially some of these species like Crataegus and Ribes and Shadbush. All of those are kind of determined by when they're in flower. So we checked that place out. It was kind of cool. Went up into the little desert there, saw a bunch of cactus, mostly Solyndra puncha growing up in there. And then we drove up into the Manzano Mountains. And this was, it was nice to be, it wasn't windy. we had been dealing with so much wind in Truth or Consequences, or Elephant Butte, and then at Rockhound, that we were excited to get up into the forest where there might be some, you know, a little bit of a windbreak. And it was, I was under the impression that we were, you know, in a red flag warning for the entire state. And so when we got into the Manzano Mountains, they had been putting little flags on the fire pits, you know, saying there's a burn ban and everything's gonna, you know, if this gets out of control, everything's gonna light up. And at this place, again, the people, you know, there were fire truck, there was one of those aquamarine, you know, U.S. Forest Service vehicles run through with a sprayer on it, like a wildfire crew truck. And I thought they were going to say something to the guy that was camping next to us, because he was having a little fire there. And everything was so crispy in the woods. Like, it would have, if any spark or anything got out of that, or they burned a piece of cardboard that lifted off into the forest, that whole place would have lit up. And there were burn marks on the way in, up to that place where it looks like it had burned pretty recently. But they didn't say anything to this guy. He had a fire. I don't know if there's just a different mentality out there about, you know, having a fire and keeping it small. We didn't have one open fire the entire time we were there. But they never said anything to him. But that whole, you know, it was like pinyon pine and alligator juniper. There were some oaks in there that they weren't leafing out yet. They sort of held all their old leaves. But I didn't really ID any of those oak trees. I'm sure they're just scrub oak or something. But underneath all of these pinyon pines were Pedicularis species, which is the lousewort. And I've been looking for the lousewort to see it. I saw it in North Carolina, but it wasn't in flower. And I've been looking to find it here in Vermont, which I may do this season. I hope to. And I would be looking for Pedicularis canadensis here. But the one that I saw there was the dwarf lousewort. Let me see if I can get that. Centanthera, Centranthera. Centranthera. These were almost the size of, you know, I think I put a picture up on Instagram and I put a quarter next to it. But they have the distinctive pedicularis leaves, and then all of these irregular purple, cream, white flowers growing. And there are some of them were no bigger than, they were flowering and no bigger than a quarter, or, you know, maybe a little bit bigger than a quarter. But all over the understory, on this little slope where our camp was. And so just below us, there were 100 of these pedicularis plants. And then, so we were on sort of one side, we were on the eastern side of that mountain. When we went up over the other side, up on some trails, we started seeing other plants in there. It was Easter when we were there, so we were, you know, and I wasn't thinking it was Easter, but when we were hiking around, we found Townsendia escapa, E-X-S-C-A-P-A, which is called the Easter Daisy, which was really exciting to find on Easter. Really diminutive plants, white petals. You know, it looks like an aster that we'd see, like a Eurybia species here that we'd see flowering in August or September. But the leaves on this were much thicker than than what we're used to around here in Vermont, with a lot of hair on it. And then these plants were also tiny. They were, you know, probably the whole plant didn't take up more than the area of like my fist. And those were, like I said before in the other shows, that there wasn't a lot of density of these plants. They weren't everywhere. I would find one plant here and then another plant 100 yards away, or another species of another plant 100 yards away, but they were never occurring, you know, in vast quantity in those areas. It was a hit or miss type thing. And it was nice for me though, because I got to see a lot of different things that were flowering. And a lot of them were small. Some of them were hard to tell if, you know, I was looking at something new, but for the most part, I think I got a lot of them. The one that kind of looked like other things was this Tetraneurus, Tetraneurus, Aculis, Aculis, the stemless four-nerve daisy. There were a number of things that looked very packer-like or groundsel. That's another little, like, herbaceous aster that we kind of have as an earlier season plant here in Vermont. So those were, you know, I was having to take pictures of the phyllaries and then try to see how I could ID those things later. But overall, the Manzano Mountains was one of the better state parks that we went to. And the next day we were planning on going up into Pecos Canyon, which is, it was probably a couple hours northeast of there. And so we kind of had to go up these back roads and then came up into just southeast of Santa Fe. And so we went into Santa Fe that day to walk around and check that out. And I did go into a dispensary there. They were, it's called Verde, I think. It's kind of in this little white building off a side street. But they were great, as opposed to that other place that I went to in Las Cruces. This place had, I got the sense that they were all integrated, meaning that they were growing their own cannabis that they were selling. But when I went in, they had, you know, somebody helped me. They had really nice displays. They had topical products and edibles all displayed really nicely. They didn't ID me on my way in at all. They didn't ask me for anything. I had, when I was checking out, I was like, "Do you need my ID?" And they were like, "Oh yeah." But they had some, I got something called Wonka Bars, which was really nice. Also, this other one called Dilly Bars, which was some cross with that. And I got one other thing, but I can't remember what it is right now. But that dispensary had some really nice stuff on the menu, and was just chill. I didn't have to wait. Walked right in. They were doing the right thing, like recreational only. And they didn't have like that medical dispensary component to it. So Santa Fe's not bad. I liked walking around Santa Fe. It's definitely more commercial in terms of artwork sales. I don't know how many, you know, art stores can survive in one town, but that place has a lot of them. And so we got lunch there and did a little sightseeing, and then went out to Pecos Canyon. So we went up to Santa Fe and then back down 25 out to Pecos, and the road into Pecos Canyon was beautiful. Like, you're next to the river, which actually had water in it, and then you've got like deep canyons on each side of you with some really cool rock features and stuff. And we pulled into this, it was kind of, the directions were a little tough, and mostly because the roads weren't labeled very well up in these little weird towns. And so we eventually found what was the state park, but it was like, you know, sort of just a pullout up on the side of the river. There was no one camping there at the time, which was different than every other state park we'd gone into. Nobody was staying there. There was no electricity, no water. There were outhouses. And so we pulled in and kind of was like, you know, what's up with this? At the other places, you know, at least there's a volunteer there who's like checking with you and, you know, verifies that you're camping there. But there was nobody at this one. It was just kind of like a free-for-all open. And when we pulled down around the back of the campsite to see where our spot was, there was some dude just sleeping in a truck there, you know, kind of hidden away so you couldn't see him when you initially pulled in. And so that kind of didn't make us feel great. And then there were no tags that said, like, our name on the campsite. So we were like, fuck this, we're just going to go back to Santa Fe and try to find something. I ended up calling Buffalo Thunder, which is like one of the casinos out there. But I don't remember how much it was a night with the dog and everything, but it was pretty expensive. But it would have been cool to go to the casino and see if we could have won anything and just hung out there for a little bit. And there's a number of casinos up in this area. All over the place. So we skipped out on Pecos. While we were there, we actually had somebody else pull in and drive around, and they were like, we're not doing this either. So they headed out. So we drove all the way back down the canyon, back to Santa Fe. And we were going to have to do that kind of anyway, because the next stop for us was going to be Taos. And that's, we had a Airbnb or a bed and breakfast in Taos that we were going to be staying at. So we knew we were going to have to backtrack out to Santa Fe anyway, so it was sort of just giving us a leg up a little bit to get there. And after going through the Black Mountains, there's two roads to get to Taos, the high road, which goes through the mountains, and then the low road, which sort of skirts them and goes around it. And so we opted to take the low road because the high road is like, I think it's another 10,000 foot, like, high elevation highway. So we decided not to do that one. And Santa Fe, we went hiking in Santa Fe. Saw some cool plants there too, actually. The astragalus, which we have astragalus here in Vermont. I think most of them are rare. But Amphoxys, Amphioxys, which is the crescent milk vetch, was growing up on some, it was called the Frijoles Trails. It's in sort of in suburban Santa Fe, but that was growing there. This other one, let me see if I can find it. Oh, yeah. The Tetranurus was there again, but it was a different one. Argentia. So there was a few different species in this genus that I was finding in different places. That one's common name is Perky Sue. But they look very similar to me anyway. But I had some people on iNaturalist helping me ID some stuff while I was out there. And, oh yeah, this other one, Tawny Cryptantha, which is Oreocara, Oreocaria, fluvocanescens. It was really great. If you paid attention while you were out hiking, you know, you'd see sort of the same things over and over. You'd see yuccas and cylinder puncha and prickly pear cactus, but then every once in a while you'd come across a little patch of something that was growing, and these Oreocaras were growing up on one side of this hill as we were coming down, and they were underneath all these sort of bigger shrubs, but a lot of them were just flowering everywhere. And they seem to be just isolated to that one little patch. I don't know if, you know, during the regular, if you do get rain, if those are more widespread. But that was a very interesting species to see. Little white flowers with a little yellow center on them. See what else I had here. Oh, there was this little... There were a bunch of shrubs that were sort of starting to leaf out, but this Cerocarpus montanus, which is alder-leaf mountain mahogany, was the leaves looked... they did look like alder, so I took a picture of a couple of the leaves to see if I could figure out what they were, because they seemed to be everywhere, and they were just starting to leaf out, so they sort of caught my eye while I was on my way by. The other one that we saw a ton, and I saw it up in Santa Fe too, but I also saw it in Taos and further south. I think we saw it in like Truth or Consequences and a few other places. This Bochera perennial rockcress. It's Bochera perennins. Little purple flowers, thick leaves, thick hairy leaves, mustard family. You know, you'd almost miss it. It's kind of like one of those really diminutive flowers, not conspicuous at all, except that they're purple. And if you notice them, they're like bright purple. I'll put up a picture on story so you guys can see that. That was kind of a cool thing to check out. So we got to do a little botanizing in Santa Fe, and then we trucked up to Taos, and we were actually staying in Ranchos de Taos. But we drove into Taos, checked out the mountains there, and we ended up going out into, I think about where this place was. It's just west of there. It's on the Rio Grande, but there was, it's called Arroyo Hondo. There's a little like public access trail you can get down to the Rio Grande there, and then I knew there was a hot spring within walking distance to there. And part of what we really wanted to do on this trip was find a natural hot spring. A lot of the other ones are just surrounded by, you know, development. You have to pay money to go see them. So I wanted to go to one that wasn't commercialized and check it out. And so we drove out to Arroyo Hondo, and the Hondo River runs right there and then connects into the Rio Grande. And not too far down. Maybe it took me like 15 minutes to walk out there, but there was a little hot spring there right on the Rio Grande. It's like there was a pool down in the water, and then a pool a little further back, and then a pool up the slope. And the hot water, it smelled a little like sulfur, but it wasn't too bad, coming right out of the rocks and then pooling there. And nobody else was around. I got naked, jumped in there, swam around for a little bit, and then hiked out. The hike down wasn't so bad. Hiking out, there's a few little like game trails that kind of you can get kind of lost on. You kind of have to rock scramble up, but definitely something to check out if you're in hot springs. It's on map, so I imagine I'm not letting out any secrets by saying that. So if you're savvy, you can find it pretty easily. But you know, botanizing on the way down into that thing, into the hot spring, I found another ribe species, Leptanthem, which is the trumpet gooseberry, which almost looks like a mix between that wax currant that I saw at Salinas Pueblo and Aurea, the golden currant. It's like a halfway, it's half the size of the golden currant flower. Red center, white petals, and it has that little tubular section on it. So I was surprised the number of ribe species that I found and the size of their flowers compared to what we have here. Similar to the Ruiz species, all the sumacs that I was seeing, and how much they were flowering in April during that time. They were, I think I saw three Ruiz species and three or four ribe species, which was Pretty interesting. Erodium again up in Taos, down on the another. So this was a non-native, the red stem storksbill. But those, last week we talked about a little bit how those seeds sort of self-drill into the soil, which is super interesting. And there's, I'm going to look a little more into that and see if there's other plants that do that too. There were, a number of cool things happening in that area of the Rio Grande. The canyon was beautiful. Lots of people out there fishing and recreating. The fishermen told me that they were catching browns and rainbows. The water actually looked pretty high. They were saying that there was a lot of water coming down from the snow melt. You could still see snow on the mountains of Taos, which maybe it's Lobo Peak and Flag Mountain, Wheeler Peak, Pueblo Peak, and Chapulín Peak. They all had still had snow on them. So we did that little hot spring trip and then headed back, and we were trying to find somewhere to eat. We stopped into this little like burger joint, which looked pretty good, and there was one guy sitting outside with a little Chihuahua dog. I had Cece with me. Lena and I sat down. She went in to get a menu, and on my right hand side, there was a woman just sitting there with like a to-go cup of soda. And then, you know, so I was just sort of waiting, and this guy came out, and he seemingly came out of nowhere. He came out of like the parking lot and then walked into my vision, and I didn't really see him. I didn't look at him at first. I was aware somebody else entered, but I was like looking at a menu or something, and he sort of slammed his hand down on the table that he was sitting at with this, where this woman was. And so that, you know, I looked over and he was like, "Hey, what's up?" And I was like, "Hey, how's it going?" And I could tell when people are on drugs or alcohol, you can just sort of see it in their eyes. And he didn't look completely there. And he started talking, just, you know, I don't know what he was saying exactly. He was asking me, like, he asked me where I was from first. And I said, "Vermont." And he was like, "Oh, Vermont." And then started talking about how he was working. It sounded like he was working on a house, like up in the mountain somewhere, and he owns it. And so I was just kind of like, you know, being friendly and just like casually talking to this guy. And the woman that was there previously was somehow with him, because, you know, she was like, she knew that he was intoxicated in some way and laughing, you know, sort of at how ridiculous he was being. And so I was just like going along with it. And then Lena came back. And so that was sort of my, you know, I really didn't want to be having a conversation with this guy, and I just wanted to get some food because we were so fucking hungry. And it took us a while to like find somewhere we could take Cece and be outside and sit on the patio. And so like, I just wanted to do this. And he like continued. So I thought that was going to be a good way for me to get out of that conversation. Like, I can just talk to Lena. And he continued like pretty aggressively to, you know, get my attention by yelling and saying things. And so I was just, you know, kind of hoping that he would lose interest in me and, you know, go back to whatever he was doing. And that's not what happened. He started like getting pretty aggressive about, you know, maybe he was pissed about tourists coming into that town. He thought that, I don't know, he thought that we were like, you know, someone that was going to cause him some sort of trouble or something, and so he started getting aggressive with us, and then Lena said something, and he started getting aggressive with Lena, and so I'm looking at this woman like, what the fuck, like, get him out of here. And so eventually she started, you know, kind of hitting him and being like, let's go, let's get out of here, like, you know, they're not doing anything. And so he started getting up like he had, I think he was trying to antagonize us and get us to do something, like to react, because he started getting up from his seat and reaching like behind his back under his shirt like somebody would if they had a gun. And so it's going through my mind, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, am I about to get a gun pulled on me? And so I don't know if he had a gun or not, but he was acting like it, and I felt like he was trying to get us to either freak out or, like, he wanted me to, like, start a fight with him or something, and I really didn't move the entire time, and Cece, like, wasn't barking or anything. She was just, like, had her head in the corner. She, like, didn't want to deal with it. She wasn't being a very good guard dog. And so Lena and I weren't reacting at all, which is probably the best thing we could have done. And he was continuing to, like, threaten to do this, you know, gun or not situation. And so I was, like, pleading with this woman with my eyes to, like, get him out of there. And she eventually did. She stood him up and, like, got him to walk away. And then the guy with the little dog, little chihuahua behind us, was like, what just happened? And he's like, at first it seemed fine, and then I looked over and it was like he was like losing his shit on you. And I was like, yeah, I don't know, I don't even know what he was talking about or anything. He just like, and he was like, I'm so sorry that happened to you. But he was a big dude, and I feel like if anything did happen, like, hopefully that guy would have stepped in. At least if I had been sitting back and watching that, I would have been a little bit ready to, like, help somebody out, or at least had, you know, my phone ready to, like, I don't know, call somebody for help or go get the manager in there or something. And then as soon as those people leave, the manager from the inside walks, like, does a round and walks around. And I was like, you couldn't have done that, like, 5 minutes ago when there was, like, shit going down. So, needless to say, I couldn't eat there. I couldn't stay there because all of a sudden they were just gone again. They just disappeared into the parking lot, and I had no idea where they were. And I was like, I don't want to be here, you know, if they come back, or, you know, I don't want him to know where I am. So we just left that place and went and got food somewhere else. But it was like, that was a really upsetting thing to have happen, especially close to the last day of leaving. So, yeah, I don't know how I could have, like, navigated that situation any better. It was probably just being at the wrong place at the wrong time. But I've had stuff happen to me like that in the past in different places while I've been traveling, so it's not completely out of my realm of experience to have dealt with something like that. So Taos was the first place that I really experienced, like, I kind of got the hint that New Mexico, at least locals, don't really like tourists, and, you know, I can probably see why. They probably bring a lot of money in there, and these people are, you know, doing their best to, you know, survive just like anywhere else in the country. So, yeah, I didn't call the cops or anything, and I hope that guy's okay, and he's, you know, it's a situation where he wouldn't have recognized me the next day anyway. So, you know, drugs and alcohol can do some fucked up things to people, but it is what it is. We survived it, and, yeah, moved on. On the way out of Taos, we chose to, I can't remember, I guess we chose to go down. We did not go through the mountains up through Red River and Eagle's Nest. We decided to go back down. We were heading towards Amarillo, or Oklahoma City. So we went from Taos to Oklahoma City in one day. And we ended up going out through Santa Rosa. So we drove south through Las Vegas, New Mexico, and then down into Santa Rosa, where Route 66, there's a little tourist attraction there called the Blue Hole, which I thought was going to be really cool to go check out. And it was really cool. It was like one of those things that you would see in Mexico or, I don't know, South America somewhere, where there's been sort of a sinkhole, and then the water is just like the color of, you know, blue toilet bowl cleaner all the way through. And it's actually like a famous place. I guess they take a bunch of divers. Divers go there to practice, you know, going down into places like that. It's kind of like a little cave, but it's open to swimming. You can go swimming there if you want. I didn't jump in. It looked kind of scary, and I don't really like swimming that much, so I didn't jump in there and see what it was like. But the water felt nice, and there were some cool plants around the hole. Chetopapa, Chetopapa ericoides, which had these, another aster, white petals, yellow center. And then ericoides is just a throwback to like ericoid leaves. So it had these, you know, tiny little leaves on it, similar to like the other plants in the ericoides family. And there was agave perii neomexicana there, which was really cool. I hadn't seen any really agaves out in the desert at all. So it was nice to get, you know, that was our last stop before we actually left New Mexico. And so it was nice to get an agave in before we left that state. Driving back, we went through, we stopped in Oklahoma City, which was, actually kind of liked Oklahoma City. Everyone seemed really nice. Met some people in the hotel. We also got in late and we were starving again, so like, you know, the restaurant was about to close, so we had to like order something really quick and then slam it in our mouth and then get out of there. And the next day we drove back up through, went through Tulsa, Springfield, St. Louis again, and then out through Indianapolis. And so we went from Oklahoma City to Columbus, Ohio the next day. And that was another, I don't know, that was like 14 hours. Maybe it was a little less than that. And then Columbus, Ohio, all the way back to Vermont in another day. So we, you know, I was noticing when we went down 2 weeks prior, we could see like all the red buds starting to bloom through Ohio, and then they were sort of blooming more as we got further south down and through Missouri. But the shad bush and the red buds. And then on the way back, I was sort of road botanizing at 80 miles an hour on the highway, but I could see mandrakes everywhere, myostis everywhere. There were a bunch of like spring ephemerals that I could tell that were coming up, you know, little herbaceous plants everywhere. And now that we're back, you know, now it's been almost, maybe it's been a month since I got back, or a month since I went down. The shad bushes, like the shad bush in my house just opened a couple days ago. Red buds are just starting to come out now. But we are having, you know, it was a great time for me to leave, because it was just on the cusp of things starting to come out here. But now we've got all kinds of spring ephemerals coming back. So I've been sort of, I got to go like, you know, begin my botanical summer a little sooner than normal, which was nice. I really want to do that every year, just get out of Vermont, you know, in April, maybe even for longer than a month, but go somewhere where it's, you know, Florida would be a good one, Alabama's on my list, Arkansas would be cool, maybe even like South America somewhere, but get some, you know, botanical exploration in before the New England season really starts and everything starts coming out. Most recently in, you know, just talking about Vermont stuff, some of the big finds that I've had this year are Trillium grandiflorum, which is that it's a trillium, but it's got big white flowers on it. I've never seen it in the woods before, but I found it last week or the week before down in North Bennington. Very striking flowers, and they were all over the understory in there. They were in many of them all in flower. Been seeing things like Metella, Diptyphylla, bunch of different kinds of violets everywhere. The other thing that's up right now is Calthum palustris, which is the marsh marigold. So if you're driving through a little wetland and you see, you know, five or six petal flowers in the understory of like alders or willows, and they're big and yellow, those are your Caltha flowers. I also found another one that looks very similar to that, but it wasn't the marsh marigold. Was it's going to take me a minute to find it. It was a lesser celandine, and it's Ficaria verna. It's actually growing down on the West River. Looked kind of similar to marsh marigold, except it had a lot more petals, and the leaves overall were a lot smaller. I have been seeing a ton of Panax trifolius, which is the dwarf ginseng that has been in Brattleboro up in the central part of the state, all over. I've been seeing that on a lot of sites this year for some reason. It's just been popping up. What else was there? Yeah, so that's, hopefully there'll be, oh, the thing that I didn't know, Polygala pachyafolia, they call it gay wings or fringed Polygala. I guess that Polygala has now moved into polygaloides. So they've sectioned out. I always thought that those, there are some Polygala species like, I forget what it's called, like tufted milkwort or something, but it's, down in, I've seen it in Massachusetts, but it looks, the flowers don't look anything like, what now called the Polygaloides species looks like. It doesn't have those like side wings. It looked more like a clover or, like a, God, my brain just doesn't work sometimes. It's a buckwheat. Looks like a buckwheat kind of. And so I haven't researched it yet, but I imagine that they broke those polygaloides out based on their flower morphology. But it'll be interesting to see. The other one that I've been seeing for a number of years is a Trillium erectum, which is the red trillium, the red wake robin. But here where I live, there's a red trillium, but it's got white flowers on it. And so for a long time, I had thought that, you know, I was seeing the variation, the white trillium or the red trillium variation album. And so I put it up on iNaturalist to see if, to stir up some shit and see what people would say about it. And because in Haynes, Flora Nova Algae Anglae, it says that, there is a variation album that exists around here, but this is an update. So these iNaturalist people sent this to me. As of April 2022, Plants of the World Online restricts the range of Trillium erectum variation album to eastern Tennessee and western North Carolina, citing the flora of southeastern United States as an authority. The occasional white-flowered red trillium found throughout the range of the species is no longer included in the Plants of the World Online concept of the taxon. The following article explains the taxon in more detail. So let's just see. So it says Trillium erectum is a species of flowering plant widely distributed across eastern North America, commonly called the red trillium based on the typical color of its petals, but other petal colors are possible. In particular, two distinct taxa of white-flowered red trillium have long been known. The name Trillium erectum variation album has been variously applied to one or more of these taxa. In 1803, André Michaux introduced the name Trillium rhomboidium to describe a form of the Trillium erectum with black fruit in the high mountains of North Carolina. The specific epithet rhomboidium refers to the broadly rhombic leaves of this and other forms of Trillium erectum. Michaux also described Trillium rhomboidium variation album, a variety with a smaller flower and white petals based on Michaux's variety. Frederick Trogat Pirsch gave a similar description for Trillium erectum variation album in 1814. The word album means bright, dead white, a reference to the variety's white petals, a distinctive feature noted by both Michaux and Pirsch. John Kunkel Small raised Trillium rhomboidium variation album to species rank in 1903. This description of Trillium album added long anthers to the list of characters cited by Michaux, while expanding the range of the taxon to include North Carolina, Tennessee, and Georgia. Gates, in 1917, R.R. Gates recognized the existence of two distinct forms of white-flowered red Trillium. This is a quote from pages 53 and 54 of something. There are thus two independent series of variations, one a negative mutation in loss of color without any other change, the other a more gradual transition toward a white flower, accompanied by decrease in flower size, increase in length of anthers, and other changes. Gates noted that the latter is well represented by the taxon Trillium album Small mentioned previously. This promoted Ralph Hoffman to propose Trillium erectum albiflorum, a white-flowered form of Trillium erectum that occurs occasionally and spontaneously throughout the range of species. Thus, the two distinct taxa recognized by Gates were formally named and described in 1922. So, the current status. Today, the names Trillium album and Trillium erectum form albiflorum are not widely recognized. On the other hand, Trillium erectum variation album is both well-known and largely misunderstood. The confusion stems from the following treatment of the taxon in the flora of North America. So this is where I got my information from. Variety album is occasionally throughout the range stated above and is almost the only variety of Trillium erectum found at elevations less than 450 meters in western North Carolina and around an area surrounding the Great Smoky Mountains, but occasionally white-flowered plants can occur in any population. Thus, the treatment of Trillium erectum variation album in FNA expands the original concept described by Michaux to include the occasional white-flowered red trillium found throughout the range of the species. In other words, FNA lumps the two distinct taxa recognized by Gates into one single taxon. So, Trillium erectum normally has dark red to red-purple flowers. However, range-wide, the species shows white, yellow-green, and paler red forms. None of these variants have been named within Trillium erectum, save for the variation album, which was named from plants in the mountains of Carolinas, and at least in part may represent introgressence with T. Trillium flexippes, because variation album in the Carolinas may possess real genetic differences from typical Trillium erectum. It may deserve recognition at some rank. However, our New England plants of Trillium erectum with white petals are simply sporadic color morphs. Given that other color morphs are not provided formal recognition, what has been called variation album in New England here is here subsumed in the species and regarded as a form without formal rank. So, if you guys see white trilliums out there, the erectum species, they're not a variation. They're just a morph, and they're not counting those as any distinct species within the trillium genus, which is really interesting. But this plant is one that comes back every year. This is the only one that I've ever observed in the wild. It grows roadside, just up the street from me. And I kind of look for it every year because it's just different than everything else. I hope that all of you have started your gardens, planted all your seeds. I'm going to put my plants out into the greenhouse today and let them kind of get used to being outside for a little bit. It looks like we're going to have really good weather for the next, you know, chance of freezing is definitely gone for us up in the mountains. So I have a bunch of herbs that I'm going to put out, a bunch of cannabis seeds that I started a little while ago. As soon as I got back, they're looking pretty big. I probably got to repot them today. Yeah, and then, you know, everything else is going to start blowing up. So thank you for listening. If you feel so inclined, if you could tap that, you know, rate this podcast and whatever platform you're listening to this on, it'll help me get out there a little easier. And if you have questions, feel free to email them, plantsarepeopletopodcast@gmail.com. You can reach out through Instagram at plants.r.people.2, T-O-O. And yeah, thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.